This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
One of the wonderful contributions of the 1832 history of Joseph Smith is his feeling after the vision. In addition to that, Joseph Smith says right at the end, "My soul was filled with love, and for many days I could rejoice with great joy, and the Lord was with me."
Coming up next on the Joseph Smith Papers, the first vision and the 1832 history.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
To the Latter-day Saints, the first vision is the most significant historical event of Mormonism. During his lifetime, Joseph Smith left four different accounts of his experience. Now, in the next two shows, we'll tell you about these different accounts, as well as some others later on that were recorded by those individuals who heard Joseph Smith tell his story. Now, each of these accounts is valuable because, as you would expect, they add more details to the story, creating a fuller picture of the event. Now, Fawn Brody, in her challenge of the first vision, said this.
"The awesome vision he described in later years was probably the elaboration of some half-remembered dream stimulated by the early revival excitement and reinforced by the rich folklore of visions circulating in his neighborhood. Or it may have been sheer invention, created sometime after 1830 when the need arose for a magnificent tradition."
So how does such an assertion by Brody square with what we know about the manner in which Joseph Smith revealed his sacred experiences?
Milton V. Backman.
Now, during his lifetime, Joseph wrote four accounts of the first vision that have been preserved. Now, he might have written other accounts. It's amazing that so many records have been preserved because of the persecution of the saints, the loss of manuscripts, but we have four that have been preserved. And these accounts were dictated or written during a 10-year period, from 1832 till 1842.
Dean C. Jesse.
The main accounts are the 1832 account, which is in Joseph Smith's own handwriting, that is the part that deals with the vision. It's in his own handwriting. The 1835 account, it was given to that eccentric Matthias fellow. That's written in his diary. And then the 1838 account, that's the one that was written in Missouri. That's the canonized version that we have in our Pearl of Great Price. And then the Wentworth letter that was sent in 1842. Those are kind of the four main accounts.
The 1838 account of the first vision was prepared by Joseph Smith for publication, and it's the one that is now the official canonized story in the Pearl of Great Price. It's the one that most people are familiar with, and we'll deal with it later on in chronological sequence. But initially, in 1832, there was an account of the first vision written by Joseph Smith himself. This one was part of a history by Joseph Smith to define the earliest events of Mormonism. This 1832 history was the earliest one written, and interestingly enough, was the last one discovered.
It was written in a book that was bought with the intent of creating a history of the church. And he labels the account. When you read the opening lines of it, he said, it reads, "A history of the life of Joseph Smith Jr., an account of his marvelous experience and of all the mighty acts which he doeth in the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God, of whom he beareth record, and also an account of the rise of the Church of Christ in the eve of time, according as the Lord brought forth and established by his hand.
Richard L. Anderson.
It was originally in a letter book, and I remember being at the historical department, as we called it then, where Dean Jesse opened that letter book and showed me the pages where the inside edge of the pages of the letter book where the 1832 history of Joseph was taken away. It was originally put there as the foundation, the beginning of the record that was kept, as Joseph at the end of 1832 was instituting his own personal diary and had evidently dictated to Frederick G. Williams this record of the coming of Moroni, but preceded it in his own handwriting by a first vision story. And this first vision story broadened our understanding, but it certainly meshes and correlates with the 1838 history that we have in the Pearl of Great Price.
So why then is this 1832 account of the first vision so important? Well, because it's the earliest one that was ever recorded, and it's the only one that was written by Joseph Smith himself. And it reveals details about him and about the story, which we'll tell you later, that are just not available in any of the other accounts.
It's very personal, very intense, very subjective. I think the account we have in the Pearl of Great Price is on the contrast, objective in the sense that it tells about his religious environment, the problems of the ministers that he talked to, what he did, how he attended meetings, investigated other churches, and finally came upon the book of James as he was reading the Bible. And he tells specifically a lot of details of that vision. But the 1832 account goes into Joseph's soul. So you get the feelings of the prophet, how agonized and perplexed he was.
And this is the only account where he talked about his long quest for truth. He said that from about age of 12 to 15, he was seeking, he was searching, and he was investigating. And what would have been the questions that he would have been asked? He wanted to secure remission of sins, so he would have asked ministers and others, "What must I do to be saved?" He definitely wanted to learn the plan of salvation. He wanted to return to his Heavenly Father's presence.
We know it comes from his mind, and there isn't any possibility for any editorial corrections or anything of that nature. And so I think it's very valuable.
Upon examining the 1832 account of the first vision, one can clearly see that it doesn't conform to the modern rules of English grammar and usage that were standardized after Joseph Smith. But to do that, to focus on the way it isn't written, will surely cause one to miss what is written.
A beautiful account. And although it's not well written based on contemporary rules of English, sentence structure is awkward, but you can tell that he was writing with conviction. He was a sincere person who had had a profound experience, and he was trying to relate with conviction that this actually happened.
James B. Allen.
So if you should ever look at it, if you should ever see a reproduction of it, what you'll see is a long two sentences that covers four pages. There's no punctuation. The spelling is not very good. The grammar is poor. But there is a power in it that you just simply can't deny.
Ronald O. Barney.
As one views the six pages of the 1832 history, beginning with the handwriting of Frederick G. Williams and then moving to Joseph Smith's own handwriting, one becomes taken, I think, by the fact that this is the first, the earliest handwriting that we have of Joseph Smith survives in narrative form. And as you look at this, this is the second page of the history. This is the third page of the history, all in Joseph Smith's handwriting. This is not his first attempt to put pen to paper. Very clearly, he has written before. There is a certain command of English. There is a certain comfort level in writing what he did. And while the spelling may not exactly conform to the Chicago Manual of Style today, Joseph Smith was able to communicate fairly clearly what was on his mind and what was in his heart.
Though it's difficult for us to create for you, the viewer, a hands-on experience with these documents, we will attempt right here to take you into the 1832 history and show you who's writing and when.
Robin S. Jensen.
So here we have the first page of this 1832 history. It opens up in the handwriting of Frederick G. Williams, a close associate to Joseph Smith.
Donald L. Enders.
Frederick G. Williams, who would become counselor in the first presidency of the church, wrote the early portion of the record. There were four very significant points that were made that occurred in Joseph's life before the church was organized. One was the receiving of a testimony from on high. Certainly that's the first vision. Secondly, there was the ministering of angels regarding the reality of the ancient record. That would be Moroni and the Book of Mormon, of course. The third point that was made is angelic administration where there was a reception of the Aaronic priesthood. And point four that was made in Frederick G. Williams' portion of the record was the reception of the high priesthood, the holy priesthood, with power and authority to administer in the ordinances of the gospel.
And then halfway down the page, it turns into the actual handwriting of Joseph Smith. The keys, that's where Joseph Smith's handwriting starts.
At that point, it's like Joseph intercedes and says, I'm going to write about the first vision. We stated that these four points were going to be made, so I'm going to write this first. And Joseph, in his own hand, from his own thoughts and deep impressions and from his heart, writes the first written account of the first vision.
Then it goes back to Frederick G. Williams. It's a little bit darker ink right here. This is the beginning of Frederick G. Williams' handwriting right here. This sharing of the pen going back and forth between Frederick G. Williams and Joseph Smith happened several times throughout this document.
The first vision took place in the spring of 1820. But as we've already explained, it wasn't written down until 1832. So why did Joseph Smith wait so long to record this?
Hugh Nibley, in 1961, in a couple of articles that appeared in the church organ, The Improvement Era, made a very important argument that I think still has application. And it ought to help us to recognize the place of the first vision among the early saints. Hugh Nibley wrote, "One may ask, why should Joseph Smith have waited so long to tell his story officially? From his own explanation in the 1838-1839 history, it is apparent that he would not have told it publicly at all had he not been induced to do so by all the scandal stories that were circulating. It was a rule among those possessing the gospel in ancient times that the greater teachings be not publicly divulged. What the present state of the evidence most strongly suggests is that Joseph Smith did tell his story to some of his followers at an early date. He did this reluctantly, confining his report to bare essentials. Throughout his life, Joseph Smith was never eager to tell the story of his first vision.
Stephen C. Harper.
By 1832, he's very conscious of the need to keep a regular history and to document his manner of life and so on. And I think at some point he recognizes that Mormonism is historical. We don't have theological schools. We don't base our understanding of the nature of God on creeds. We base it on largely on the first vision. And I don't know if in 1820 he thought that way or 1830, but sometime in that window over the next decade, I think he realizes we have got to get this stuff on record. If I don't transmit the first vision, the restoration of the priesthoods, the reception of the priesthood keys down, it won't get passed on. Mormonism evaporates.
The 1832 history is unique in Mormon literature. Why? Well, because as of November 1832, the only other bound book in all of Mormondom is the Book of Mormon.
The intriguing thing is that it's not a loose leaf. It's found in a ledger book. I say that's intriguing because before 1832, Joseph Smith primarily wrote things down on loose leaf paper. All of the revelations, all of the scriptures, they were all on loose leaf pages. One of the new things about this book is that it's written into a volume. And that was, if you look at the pattern of record keeping at that time, this is a new step in Mormon record keeping. So scholars today know this volume as Letter Book 1, the first Joseph Smith letter book.
Now, even though it was a commandment of the Lord that would have caused Joseph Smith to make this first attempt at creating a history, there is some contemporary evidence that suggests what it was that may have actually prompted him to begin at this time in 1832.
Something happened in the 1830s that may have contributed toward the production of that 1832 history. In February of 1831, one of the arrivals to the Latter-day Saints on the western frontier, in particular the Connecticut Western Reserve, which was actually northeastern Ohio, Alexander Campbell, who became, of course, one of the principals in the Disciples of Christ, in February of 1831, he published something that he called Delusions. Delusions was the first sophisticated review of the Book of Mormon. And of course, it was critical. And in turn, it was critical of Joseph Smith as the fraudulent producer of this imposition upon the American religious community. That article in the Millennial Harbinger of February 1831 was produced as a pamphlet in the middle of the year in 1832, a collaboration between perhaps Alexander Campbell and another prominent clergyman of the time, Joshua Himes. And while the Millennial Harbinger didn't get a lot of circulation, the pamphlet Delusions obtained a much larger audience. The credibility of Joseph Smith became an issue then. It wasn't just word of mouth. It just wasn't the numerous newspaper reports. Here you had something that was much more concrete, much more analytical, much more believable to a religious public than just hearsay. And so perhaps it is the case that Joseph Smith decided that he would respond in part to the challenges to his personal credibility that had been raised by Alexander Campbell.
So to summarize then, what we have here is the earliest account of the first vision ever written, dated 1832. Written as part of an early history and bound within the pages of a book called Joseph Smith's Letter Book 1.
Mark Ashurst McGee.
To understand Joseph Smith's circa 1832 history and the context surrounding its creation, I think the best place to start is with a revelation that Joseph Smith dictated in March of 1831. And this is a revelation for John Whitmer. Part of the revelation is, "It shall be appointed unto him," John Whitmer, "to keep the church record and history continually. For Oliver I have appointed to another office." So we actually learned two things here. One is that John Whitmer is being appointed to keep the church record and the church history, and that apparently he's replacing Oliver Cowdery. The Revelation says Oliver has been appointed to something else. Well, what is that? That is the Lamanite mission. But if we go to the beginning of John Whitmer's history and see where it starts, he starts his historical narrative with the departure of Oliver Cowdery and the missionaries to the Native Americans. So that makes sense because he's replacing Cowdery in terms of keeping records in history. That suggests that Cowdery had kept history and records up to the point of his departure. Now, what gap does this leave? It leaves the very earliest history of Joseph Smith before the arrival of Oliver Cowdery. Well, that is precisely the time period that we find covered in Joseph Smith's circa 1832 history. It is a brief narrative that begins with his birth and goes up just to the moment of Oliver Cowdery's arrival.
It's called the 1832 history, but that dated title is not immediately apparent from the record. It came only after some careful analysis by scholars.
We don't know for sure when Joseph Smith wrote his first history, what's often referred as the 1832 history. It may have been written as early as the second half of 1831. It's possible that it was written at the very beginning of 1833, but everything kind of points to late 1832 as when it was written. Or at least that's when it looks like it was copied into what became Joseph Smith's first letter book.
It could be that this account was written probably between the 20th of July, 1832, and the 27th of November of 32. The beginning date, the 20th of July, is determined from the fact that part of the account is in the handwriting of Frederick G. Williams. And Williams started working for Joseph Smith as a scribe on the 20th of July. So that's the beginning date that it could be. on the 27th of November 1832, the first item in the letter book that this book became after they stopped writing the history is dated the 27th of November of 32. And then right after that, they go back and pick up earlier documents that go back into the late 1820s. And then when they bring it up to the date, up to 1832 again, then they just continue on. So the impression you get is that the 27th of November was kind of a key moment.
So, starting 27 November 1832, the history just cuts off after only 6 pages. And the remainder of the book is a letter book. Now, is there any evidence to determine what may have caused this abrupt change of course?
And on that same day, Joseph started writing his own journal on the 27th of November, 1832, in another little book. And it seems that he may have thought that maybe a different approach to record keeping or his record, a personal record, be important, and for that reason shifted from this narrative history as it was started to a more multifaceted type of record keeping.
We said earlier that John Whitmer started his history where Oliver Cowdery left off. Well, obviously then, Oliver Cowdery must have kept some kind of a history. By going further into Letter Book 1, there's additional evidence that Oliver Cowdery did indeed keep a history. Which history today doesn't survive?
Following the November 1832 letter to Phelps, there are six letters copied into the letter book retrospectively. Upon closer inspection of these six letters, one intriguing pattern comes out. Every one of these letters is either addressed to or addressed from Oliver Cowdery. Oliver Cowdery seems to be the unifying thread in all of these early letters. So here we have what seems to be an Oliver Cowdery archive, his personal papers that in 1832, late 1832 or early 1833, are copied into this letter book. He not only kept the letters he received, but the majority of these letters are letters he sent to other people, which would mean, rather than Joseph Smith and Frederick G. Williams going to each of those individuals and getting the letters from Cowdery, it means that Cowdery kept retained copies of letters. Now, this helps us understand Oliver Cowdery as record keeper. When Joseph Smith is translating the Book of Mormon with Martin Harris and with Emma Smith early on, there's very little record keeping being done. When Oliver Cowdery enters the scene in April of 1829, we have a boom of record keeping. All of a sudden, there are multiple revelations received to Joseph Smith April of 1829, whereas before, we only had a minuscule amount of revelations. When Oliver Cowdery comes onto the scene, he is very conscious of creating these records. He's writing down the revelations, whereas earlier they might not have written down the revelations. He's making notes in a notebook. We have a reference that Cowdery had a personal notebook, whether it was a journal or a diary or a daybook. He was a record keeper.
We said at the beginning that there are several accounts of the first vision. Tonight we focused on primarily just one, and that's the 1832 history.
For further study on the 1832 history, go to josephsmithpapers.org and click on History.
And next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, the scholars will describe Joseph's other tellings of the story.
My tongue seemed to be swollen in my mouth so that I could not utter. I heard a noise behind me like someone walking toward me. I strove again to pray, but could not. The noise of walking seemed to draw nearer. I sprang upon my feet and looked around, but saw no person or thing that was calculated to produce the noise of walking.
I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.